Okay, hello.
Hello and welcome to episode, I think this is 60.
Yeah, we have
a nice round number.
Special guest today, McLean, producer. Say hello.
Can I say hello?
Yeah, say hello.
Hello.
I'm here. McLean's here. Just make sure that squeaky chair you're sitting in doesn't squeak the whole time.
McLean's job is to prevent us from forgetting stupid things like hitting record and...
Yeah. Is he the Robin to our Howard Stern? Like, what...
Who is Robin? Hopefully he's less annoying than Robin. I don't think she actually does anything, because I feel like there's probably someone who actually knows what they're doing who produces his podcast.
You have strong feelings about Robin, huh?
I just, like, I used to listen to Howard Stern, and then I just, like, couldn't stand her annoyingness. And there's another guy that I couldn't stand. Also, did you ever listen to Bob and Tom?
I don't know. A radio person.
I don't know if Bob and Tom is, like, a regional thing or if it's a national thing, but Christy is their, like, little sidekick, and she's also super annoying. I don't know. So, McLean, just be less annoying than them, and your job will be done.
Yeah. Okay. So, you had a trip to California this weekend?
Yes, I did. It was fun. So, I went out there with my brother just to kind of, like, kick it, and it was gorgeous out there, like 70 to 85-ish, sunny with no rain, dry. And it was cool. We just, like, were out there hanging out, went to a hockey game, witnessed a shootout, which you don't get to see live very often. Drank a lot of beer. That was pretty much the summation of the trip. But the worst part about going out to California is, well, and I don't know if we would do this again, but I just hate LAX. And I know that's, like, cliche to, like, talk about how crappy LAX is, but it's just so busy and gross, and he doesn't have pre-check, which... If you're out there and you have $100 to drop, get pre-check, because it'll if you fly a lot, it saves you so much time. Because I was, like, the line to, like, go through the security was huge, and I was just hanging out with him for, like, in line, because I wasn't gonna, like, make him stand there and wait. But I just got fed up, and I was like, all right, I'm going through pre-check, and just went right around and
right
done
there.
And, like,
2 minutes, huh?
Yeah, like, no. Well, and here's what's messed up is the line for the regular security was enormous, and there was one, like, little ID checker in the regular security line. When I went over to pre-check, there were two TSA pre-checker people. So not only was the line shorter, but it was moving twice as fast. And I was actually the last guy through pre-check before they cut the pre-check line down to one and made the other one two. But it was just like, man, pre-check is the greatest. You don't have to take off your shoes. You don't have to take off your belt. You don't have to take your laptop out of your bag. It's perfect.
Well, even if you don't travel that much, like, say you fly twice a year, that's two round trips, so that's four check-ins through security, mm-hmm. times 5 years, which pre-check or global entry are valid for. That's 20 flights for, like, it's like 80. It's not even $100.
I think it's
$85. So that's 20 flights. That's $4 a flight. It's like, would you pay $4 to not go through all that BS?
Oh my gosh, I'd pay some
money. Absolutely. And if you fly more than that, then it just gets cheaper and cheaper. Like, I fly an offer, it's probably a buck each time.
The only thing with him is, like, because I was talking to him, I was like, dude, you got to get pre-check. Like, well, I bet you could, like, expense it as, like, you know, for his business or whatever.
Yeah, and for sure he could.
And but I was like, you know, anytime he's flying with his family, then they all have to be pre-checked too. And that's kind of the only hang up. But just, like, leave them in the dust, leave the kids on their own.
Just zip the kids up in your bag.
Yeah.
And then put them
in your laptop bag.
Yeah. You don't have to
roll
take it
through
out.
The x-ray machine. Yeah. Get a free x-ray, make sure all their bones are healthy. plus that flight is a bit of a slog. I mean, you've done that flight a couple times where it's just like,
yeah,
it's just sitting 4 hours in a plane is not great. But then I know that pales in comparison to, like, if you make a cross country or you go international. But I think the longest I've sat in a plane might be going out to LAX or out to LA or California, where it's like 4 hours in flight time.
Yeah,
it's not great.
Longest I've done is 7. I think I forgot about Spain. That one had to be the longest. I think that was 8, something like that.
Oof.
So I was thinking my one from Canada, from Edmonton to Phoenix. I think that was a straight shot. I don't remember.
What's great going west, though, is it's a 4-hour flight, but it's a 2-hour net.
That's nice.
Whereas coming back, oof.
Yeah, you lose your whole day.
Yeah, it's... not a fun trip coming back, but...
Yeah. 8 hours on a plane is pretty rough. I was just watching... Do you watch vlogs? Any vlogs on the YouTube?
No vlogs.
I'm watching them doing recon, because I'm starting one, but Casey Neistat's, like, the big one. He's the guy who wears the glasses, and he has like 10 million subscribers. He's in New York City, and he travels a bunch for various reasons, but he gets a lot of tickets expensed because when he flies, he'll like vlog about it and show off the cabin and all this other stuff. So he was describing how he was talking in one of his episodes how he like hadn't spent enough time with his son, and so then like Turkish Airlines just called him like, hey, we'll like send you guys to Istanbul for the weekend or wherever. So they sent him 2 first-class tickets, which on that flight is like having your own little suite for like $25,000 a ticket. And he just like shows what it is, and those things are crazy.
Yeah,
they're like the size of a car. And then you just like sleep in it. It's got a TV. It's just wild. There's a whole bar. There's a whole bar area for the first class room. Those are big, like 777s, I guess. They have a lot of
that's crazy
lot of space.
That was the other thing. Like the planes are crazy, man. Like the plane we took, like flew back. Obviously, I don't know what it is. Probably 747. But those things are so massive, and they just get knocked around by turbulence. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, we hit, like, some like, semi-significant turbulence going over the Rockies, and it was, like this big plane getting knocked around. Like, that's nuts. But I'm sure those things are maybe a little bit different, but that's nuts.
Well, there's some educational YouTube series I like, stumbled upon a long time ago. I was, like, searching for something, some answer to some, like, random question, like, how do airplanes make money or something like that.
Yeah. Where do you
economics
come
of it.
From?
Yeah, and I found this good little channel. I can't remember what it was, but they broke down like the economics of a plane. So you have a first class cabin, a business class, economy, and all that stuff. And they were talking about just how in the past flying was a luxury. So the average plane ticket was not affordable to the average American. Yada yada yada. And then over time it switched, but now they have the grades. Obviously, like, there's economy, there's first class, there's business, whatever. And you know, like, you wonder how, like, why are plane tickets so expensive? They're not really that expensive, but they're like kind of expensive sometimes. But he basically just talks about how like economy is not what makes airplanes even money. Even like first class makes so much more money. So they broke down, like, you know, these 12 first class tickets that cost $20,000 each, you know, gives the plane $250,000 of revenue. And then this amount of tickets for, you know, business class, $800 a piece times 100 is like $80,000 revenue. And then you break down all the economy, these $200 tickets, $300 tickets, and just like just those handful of first class passengers.
The economy tickets like pay for the peanuts.
Yeah, like they pay for everything. So it's really interesting. But yeah, I mean, there's still, just like anything, there's the luxury. Because you think like, God, $20,000 for a flight? Like how... You could do so much cool stuff when you land. When you land with that $20,000, when you land, you have $1,000 a night hotel room for 10 nights, and then have $10,000 to just like throw into the air and have it fly down,
to, like,
and sprinkle,
wash yourself
rain.
With.
Yeah. So you just gotta just.
This is the other
in terms of what people who make millions of dollars make, what a dollar's worth.
Yeah.
Them.
The other thing that this reminds me of is we were also talking about like standby. And I don't think I've ever flown standby after outside of that time that we got stranded. But, like, have you ever flown standby by choice?
Yeah, it sucks.
I would think so. I was like, what are these people doing who just, like, have... I mean, you're basically just wasting a day.
Yes,
potentially,
you are.
Potentially.
Yes, you are.
And I don't know what the price difference is. Is it, like, that much cheaper to gamble on it like that?
Well, usually you fly standby because you have a voucher of some kind. So, like, I flew standby because you remember John Redman, one of our clients? Mm. John had a friend who worked for Southwest, and I guess he just got all these vouchers that he couldn't use all the time, so he just give them to his friends. And John gave a couple to me because, you know, I was going to, like, different, like, tryouts and, like, winter things and whatever. Because, like, in one of my gap years. I can't remember what year it was. But so I would fly standby, and you just have to show up and hope that you can get on the flight that you're choosing. And sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. And most of the times I did, but sometimes I didn't. And then you're just, like, stuck waiting for the next one. And a lot of times you don't know until, like, when it's time to go.
Right.
So you have to carry on. You can't check bags when you fly standby. And so I end up sleeping in the airport a couple times because of it. So I remember I went to Florida, and I hadn't yet, I don't think, missed my flight on standby. I'd gotten in every one that I wanted. But then coming home from, like, Miami or wherever I was, I finally like missed one, and then I think I missed the next one too. Like, they didn't have space, and then I ended up getting into O'Hare late enough where I missed the bus back down to Bloomington, so I just was stuck for the night.
See, that's
and,
what
I think I got in so late. I think I got in at like 11. Like, I ended up getting a really late flight, and then I just was like waiting for Amtrak in the morning, like the 7 a.m. Amtrak, and so I think I slept in the airport from like, I don't know, like 11 to 4, and then I walked through Chicago in the pitch black, which was not probably the safest thing to do with my laptop and everything. And then I got into the Amtrak station and slept from like 5 to time to go. So that was not a great night.
No,
it's not a great
like
night.
My buddy, I just had lunch with my buddy like not too long ago, and he's a pilot for Envoy, which is a regional like flight or carrier for American Airlines. And you know, he was talking about like, yeah, like anytime you want to like go somewhere, blah, 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 he's like, I can get you a standby voucher. And I was like, there'll never be a time where I want that, because if I have a day to like burn, so to speak, I'm not going to burn it sitting in an airport. Like, I'm going to do something else that like, and I understand like, oh, free flight though to like wherever you want to go. But it's like, I'd rather like just take advantage of however much free time that is rather than burn half of it waiting for. Because you like the way the flights go, it's like, yeah, there's a 9 and an 11, and like you said, but you can just miss on all of them.
Yeah, sometimes you do.
Or, yeah, but I mean, I guess the flip side is you can hit on the first one, and then it's like, that's amazing. But
well, I think part of it's the destination too. So if you want to go to like Armpitville,
oh, I love Armpitville. It's so nice this time of year.
Pretty good chance you're gonna get on that flight. But if it's like getting, you know, like a Sunday,
I think that's to Coolsville.
Yeah. I think that was part of the reason I missed that last one. Like, it was one of the popular times to get back to Chicago on like a Sunday night. So, you know, I was trying to get back into Chicago at like 7 p.m. or 5 p.m. So I can make my, like, that's a pretty, all right, we had a weekend away and we're coming back kind of
right.
time.
That's what I was thinking about on ours is Sunday from LAX to O'Hare. I was like, there's no chance any of these standby people are going to be getting
no shot there on there. So you never know. But then there's always like this someone just, they missed their flight. They're just late or whatever.
Well,
and that happens too.
I say that, and on that flight, there was no one in my next to, like, sitting next to my brother. So apparently, all those standby people got on. But I was just like, that's got to be pretty rare. A Sunday, early afternoon Sunday flight back to O'Hare from LAX. Like, yikes.
Yeah. So what I started doing was just building in an extra day, or I just tried to make sure I knew that I could miss like an extra day at the end. And like you said, most of the time, I think I was probably like 6 for 8. Something like that. If I had that many,
I'd be curious.
That's
like,
wasn't terrible.
Someone who does standby often, I'd be curious to see like what their stats are. Like, yeah.
And if you're just like one person or two people, like not as big a deal. But if you have family and like kids, like that'd be. Of course, you need a lot of standby passes, but that would be a nightmare where you're like with your whining kids and they're crying and
sitting in an airport where there's literally zero things to do.
Yeah, but I actually like airports, so it's not a big deal for me. But yeah. So good old standby.
Good old standby. So what are we talking about today?
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. We both have busyness in our lives.
Busyness
in our lives. So I figure we talk about organization.
Yeah. Because well, this brings up a good point that, or I guess it's relevant in that, you know, I was gone for 3 or 4 days, and it's hard not to like see your list of things to do pile up.
Yeah, I sent you two things.
What?
Yeah, I sent you two things.
Yeah, and it's just like there's an inevitable dread, the Sunday scaries, when you know your trip is done and like the next couple days are like gonna be catch up and trying to like get back to claw your way back to like being breaking even, and inevitably you have to like kind of develop a priority list because there's only so much time in the day, especially like with the two of us having basically from 3, depending on the day, from 3 to 8 is kind of a wash. Like, it's either we're going to be in lessons or baseball groups. And then even if we're not, like the half hour, hour break in between lessons, it's hard to get stuff done because I think you've mentioned this before, like you want to be present when you're at the facility and like, you know, be available for questions and all that kind of stuff. So if you like take that chunk out of the day, and like for me, getting done at 8 or 8:30, I'm pretty much going home and going straight to bed because I have to be up at 4:30 the next morning. Well, so it's like okay, at post 3:30, it's pretty much like I'm gonna get, you know, 2 or 3 little things done, but all the big stuff has to come from in the morning, And in the morning time, there's like, for me, there's strength groups, like you were doing all your website stuff. So it's hard to find time to get stuff done. And when you do have time, you have to be able to like smash things. Like you can't mess around and be like, which of these things do I need to get done? It's like, you got to knock these out. And so, yeah, it's like organization. And for me, it's like prioritizing stuff in a list. Like everybody has a giant list of things to get done. Every human being does. And it's like, okay, which of these things needs to get done first? Or which of these things takes the most time to complete? That's the other thing too.
Yeah.
I'm in a continual battle to find out what the most efficient way is to do this. I have my little notebook right here, which I know, I think you've said this before, but I am like the worst at, if I don't write something down, like if someone comes into Warbird and they're like, hey, Lucas, can you send me that thing? I'll be like, yeah, man, for sure. And then literally 10 seconds later, it's completely out of my head.
Yeah.
Because there's like, either there's five other requests or there's like you mean to write it down and don't. And so like, that's been the biggest thing for me is like writing stuff down.
Have you read any books or done any like formal organization education?
It's been a while. I was trying to think what I did most recently was, there's this thing called a bullet journal, which is this idea. It's like this, I guess, I don't know, proprietary idea. Like, I think it's just like this like copyrighted or trademarked idea. Ugh. Where it's like, yeah, that water is old and bubbly. Probably a good layer of dust on that.
Why does this is this phenomenon? Let's talk for a minute about why water tastes so horrible after sitting out all night. It's the phenomenon of off-gassing, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So that's when the dissolved gases inside of it bubble out, which changes the taste of it. So it's really like more like pure water actually over after a night. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm gonna look it up right now. But yeah, so after you leave a glass of water out for, what was that, 24 hours, I guess? Or no, not even.
12 hours? I don't know if I drank out of this yesterday. This could be 2 days worth of old water. But it still looks so good.
Wait, no, it's not off-gassing. Apparently off-gassing, according to Kawaii Mega, what? We've all experienced that new, okay, blah, 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 blah. Off-gassing, just define it, you turd.
Well,
hold on, riff.
Off-gassing is, I mean, I'm curious to see what your research comes back as, but off-gassing is like, say you get like a new foam mattress or a foam mattress pad, or like they like notoriously smell,
right?
Or just like anything that's like right out of the manufacturing process. As it like sits there, you know, the smells and all those things that like from they dissipate. So that's like the off-gassing process. But also with things that have dissolved gases inside them, like water, like there's just like some amount of nitrogen and like other randomness, I guess, in water, it like just dissipates now that it's like free. And then that's what changes the flavor over time is what I read before.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that's completely true or not.
So, yeah, it's like you're saying, atmospheric gases like nitrogen, I'm sure there's
others. Yeah, because you do see the bubbles, which I don't know.
Yeah, so, okay, so gases such as nitrogen and oxygen can dissolve in water, blah, 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 blah. When you draw a glass of cold water from your faucet and allow it to warm to room temperature, nitrogen and oxygen slowly come out of solution, with tiny bubbles forming and coalescing at sites of microscopic imperfections on the glass.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But is that why it tastes like garbage? Why is my water tasting like hot garbage?
I'm assuming. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's probably that. So you got probably got some like skin cells in there, spider parts falling from the ceiling.
I love getting in like heated debates with kids when they bring up that myth that you swallow like 12 spiders a year. I love
and for
that.
Some reason,
I love
they're
that
so like
it's pervasive. Everyone believes that,
and it's like a hard belief. Like they're like, no, it's certain.
It's like, dude, that's definitely not number one. That's not how human beings evolved. We would not be here if we were so like blasé about creatures crawling in our mouths while we slept.
Right. Yeah.
Like, that's not all right.
Well, and I'm curious, like, what they think happens. Like, you like, I'm there, like you.
It crawls on in there and just goes. Like, what does it do?
Just go. It like goes. the theory is it crawls into your throat and then like you dies and then you falls down your esophagus.
Yeah, because a large percentage of them, if that was true, would certainly bite and like fight for their lives.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And you'd wake up all be going to all the time.
Or like you cough up an egg sac in the morning, like.
And this was my main argument. It's just by, so if it's like, wasn't it like 12 or some crazy,
I think it's eight.
A couple, whatever. So if it was 8 and that's an average, you've got to remember that like there's a lot of people that live in new homes that just don't have a million spiders running around. And then there's a lot of houses that have a lot more spiders. So you're saying that like if you're living in a new condo building in New York, and you're getting probably zero spiders. So with this being a global average, that means the kids who live in like rural, like old farmhouses are eating like 30, 40 spiders
right.
to make up for that
or
zero.
Like, in my mind, there's some like spider headquarters where they're like monitoring like how many spiders they've gotten into each mouth.
Yeah, Sally, she hasn't had any. Yeah. Guys, it's September.
Yeah.
You haven't been in Sally's mouth.
The Joneses moved into their new house 2 days ago. We got to get more spiders in there.
It just makes no sense.
Yeah.
And it's it's completely unverifiable, too. That's
well, yeah, that's the other thing.
Unverifiable.
What
Who has studies on this?
Yeah, what scientist has done a study on this where they bring people into a lab and they, with spiders, they have a control group where they have, like, no spiders or I don't know. How would you test this?
There's no way. It's so stupid. Oh, God.
There's this, like, I imagine a scientist sitting at, a, like, a night vision monitor, and you just, oh, there's a spider. They're just watching him crawl into their nose and mouth.
But then they have to verify if you actually eat it. It's not just if it goes in your mouth. That doesn't count. That's, like, it goes in and out and swoops, like, when you're playing basketball, when it goes, like, kind of down into the net and then it comes out. That's, like, when it goes in and out of your mouth. Like, you have to eat it. That's the myth. It's not going in your mouth. It's like a ringer. It's like a leaner in horseshoes.
Yeah.
Leaves a lot to be desired.
So I don't know how that has ever, like, where that came from or how it's gotten so pervasive and it, like, still exists, but.
Yeah.
You don't eat any spiders, any spiders at all, ever, in your life.
And I think I told this story at some point on the podcast, but I'll never forget. I was in my sister's house in college. I went to visit her at James Madison, and I slept in her basement, which was notoriously, like, buggy. And I was sleeping on an air mattress. I was sleeping on my back. And it was, like, that point where I was just coming back to, like, I was about to wake up where it was, like, kind of light. And the light's, like, going through my eyelids. And what do you call it when you're just, like, kind of lucid?
Yeah.
And just about to wake up. And then vroom, I feel this creature sprint across my face from ear to ear. And it was one of these, like, 3-inch long, like, millipedes or centipedes, whatever the grosser ones are, the really fast, like, evil looking ones. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of those in her basement, and I could just, like, feel it just, like, it's like, oh.
Oh,
oh God. And then when you find one of those kind of like cockroaches, like, you wonder how many were just, like, just hanging out on me the whole night.
Oh yeah, I
probably
mean, like, that's
probably a lot.
It's one of my things, like, I always think about that. Like, you know how they'll do like the black light in a hotel room, and it's just like super gross. If you had a black light that would reveal like bugs, or like an infrared camera that can see little heat spots. I know bugs aren't hot, but and then you just like see them riddled around your room. Because if you see one, there's like at least 10 that go unseen or crawled over. How many crawled over your face over the course of a night when you weren't lucid?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm gonna tell my bug story, which is a little bit more graphic, but Warbird is also very notorious for being bug ridden. And in the summertime, it's really hot in here, so the bugs want to find all the, like, cool spots. And so one morning, I got in here over the summer, and I went into the bathroom to start off my day with going to the bathroom.
A sit-down, huh?
A sit-down. And I'm, like, kind of still, like, groggy because it was early. And I, like, pop the old toilet seat lid, sit down, go to do my business, and I just feel a flutter from underneath.
What?
And I, like, freaked out. Luckily, I hadn't started yet. I freaked out, stood up, and this big moth just comes flying out. And I was like, oh, my God. It could have ended so much worse than it did. But that was, like, I was, like, a snake bit after that. Like, I couldn't, like, mentally get fortified to, like, sit back down and finish. I was like, I got to come back to this later because I'm shook right now. It was not fun. So now it's like, for a very long time after that, it was like, kick the toilet seat. Like, anybody in there? So,
I just read a story about some guy from Australia died because he ate a slug, and then he got some, like, parasite from the slug.
He ate a slug on purpose?
And he died, yeah, just like, you know, like being stupid with your friends, like, when he was, like, 19.
Man.
And then he eventually went in a coma, and then came out and had brain damage and then, like, died 8 years later.
From
like,
eating
just,
a slug?
Just recently, yeah. Which was not normal. It's not like...
That's
I was
crazy.
Like, man, do slugs just, like, paralyze you? And, like, no, they have... But I guess there's one... There's, like, some, like, rat parasite that, I guess, if a rat then has it and then passes its leavings on the ground and a slug, like, eats one of the larvae that gets passed out,
mm-hmm.
then the slug can have that parasite, and the kid ate that slug and then got that parasite. And most people recover from it. It's really rare that this happened to this person, but he didn't, and he did die from eating the slug long term. Like,
that's kind of crazy.
That's crazy, yeah. There's been lots of crazy. All right,
well, then I guess I won't eat all the slugs that I was going to eat.
But
which I was actually just thinking of, I was going to ask
that
you.
That sounds horrifying.
It is horrifying.
Slug. They're
also,
just, like, big and disgusting and juicy.
Like, that's super sad, and, like, but to be that guy's family and be like, oh, like, Carl died? Like, why? Or is he's in a coma? Why is he in a coma? Well,
yeah,
he ate a slug. Like,
that's rough.
I've come up with a different story.
Yeah, yikes.
But I was thinking earlier about asking you how much I'd have to pay you to eat, like, one of those beefy spiders where, like, if you were to bite down, you know, you can, like, when you squish them, you can, like, feel their little thorax burst.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that because, oh, when you step on with your foot.
Yeah, yeah. That would be not good. Yeah, eating a slug, you chew
that's
that
gross.
Or you just do it like an oyster?
I don't know. It's got to be oyster. They're so gross and sticky and, like, ugh.
Very mucousy. Very snot covered.
That's like one of those dares that, like, everyone's got to start throwing in, like, a lot. There's going to be, like, a pile of money for that to happen.
That's
even then, it's going to be, like,
especially
a
if
lot
it's
of
like
trepidation.
If it's you gotta give it one chew, you gotta put it between your molars. Like, yeah, that would not be good.
Yeah, and the story of it just sounded like they were like, oh yeah, like, and then he just like did it. It just seemed like it was very like quick. He's maybe just like one of those guys who's like doesn't care.
Yeah,
he'll just do that gross stuff and whatever. But yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Especially if he didn't get anything out of the deal.
No.
Didn't even get like $20 or anything or.
Yeah. But organization. So I listened to an audiobook on the recommendation of, my former youth baseball coach, who's close friends of my dad, and we stay in touch a little bit. But he's really high up in the Army, and he said he has tons and tons of stuff to do, and hadn't in the past like managed it well. Like he just started to feel like overwhelmed, and he said now he does like way more stuff than he ever did. But feels a lot better about it. So he recommended this book called Getting Things Done, which sounds profound.
Right.
But it's actually like the most boring audiobook of all time. And that's how you know it's good. because this guy just drones on forever about just all these little things about how to organize. But it's basically that it's all predicated on the fact that your subconscious brain is like constantly churning on things that you know need to be done but you don't know how to do yet or are just like festering because you're putting them off, and you'll feel better when you log it all well and then have a system to then just come back to it. So it's like once you can put it down somewhere where you know where it exists and you know exactly how to access it and you know exactly how to accomplish it when you come back to it, then you can like put it aside and
be confident in the fact that it'll get done when you get back to it.
Yeah, like if you're going to make tacos that night for your family and you know that you bought taco shells, you put them in the cupboard, like you don't walk around that day worrying about taco shells.
Right.
Like you don't think about it at all. You just go home and you grab them and you make them. So it's kind of that same thing, which makes a lot of sense. And I can definitely feel that like that pain when I have things that I know I need to be doing and I know I'm putting them off because I don't necessarily haven't like outlined the steps of how to do them. Or I'm like, I know they're not on a list, and I'm just hoping I don't forget them.
Mm-hmm.
So I've definitely been better at writing that stuff down before bed when I know I just remembered something, and I don't want to forget it. Rather than relying on it, I'll like write it down. But,
well, and I would say like that for me, that's like the literally the biggest thing because like my nightmare is, let's say I come across an hour during the day where it's like, okay, I can sit down at a computer and like knock out some stuff, but I don't have anything written down. Then it's like you're like floundering like, okay, what was that thing I had to do? But if you just have like a thing you put down where it's like, okay, bop bop bop, like that's so much more efficient. And the biggest thing for me is just like you said, finding a time to literally write stuff down, which is why like I have this little journal. And for me, it's so much better. I don't know why, what it is about something physical like writing it down on paper versus, because I've tried, and I know you have too, like a bunch of different digital kind of like task organizers and stuff like that. And for me, they just aren't as effective. Like, I'm not as good at getting them down, like getting them in there. It's not as satisfying, like checking them off. Whereas like the actual like act of physically crossing something off is very satisfying to me. But yeah, like that's huge. And like you said, I'm the exact same way, especially like going to bed at night when I haven't written something down. I'm like, well, I'm going to fall asleep right now, and then I'm going to forget this ever existed. But if it literally just exists on a piece of paper and I know where the paper is, then it's fine.
Yeah. So I'm to the point where I need to start implementing it, which means so it's more than just talking about it. It like has a whole system. So basically you need to have an inbox. So whether it's like a physical paper box, which is less so the case nowadays, but it could still probably be that, and like basically anything that comes your way, whether it's an email with a task, you have to either like your in solution is, all right, anything that comes into me needs to be trashed. If I don't have to do anything with it or don't have to keep it, either needs to go to a reference bin where I want to keep this for later where I can easily access it. I need to, can I do this in like 2 minutes or less is one sort of type where if you can, then you should probably just do it at that point right then. Do I need to delegate it? If so, then it goes in the delegation pile, and you need to figure out immediately who it goes to, and then like whatever. And then there's the other, you know, like does it have to be done on a specific day? And if it does, that's how he says you should use your calendar. You shouldn't use your calendar just telling yourself what to do on a day. Only things that happen or that need to happen by that specific day. So his calendar usage is different than, I guess, others were, you know. People want to use the calendar to say, I'm going to do these 8 things on Monday. I'm going to do these 8 things on Tuesday.
He says, I see what you're saying.
Only put things on Wednesday on the calendar if it needs to be done by that day. Like, gotcha. It has to be it's time sensitive specifically for Wednesday. So then whenever you go to your calendar, you see, okay, Tuesday, I must do this. Wednesday, I must meet with McLean. Thursday, I must email this person and do this person and this person because, you know, they go out of town on Friday and I have to have that meeting with them or whatever, which I think makes a lot of sense. And then... But basically, you know, he's just starting from scratch and getting everything in your life processed into your inbox and then putting in all the appropriate places. And so then you have – and then making your workspace and your life, whether it's the digital task masters and all this other stuff, easily accessible so that your references are always where you need them. And anything that is there is always, like, where you need it. And then also outlining the steps. So he says anything that's a project is 2 or more steps. So if it's – you know, like, drink this coffee, that's an action that can go on the actions list. So the main thing is, like, the actions list. So once you've processed everything to reference or, you know, do this now or on the calendar, then there's like, your actions list. So which things need to happen first? And if it's an actions list, then it's just one thing you can do, like, drink this coffee, pick up this baseball. And if it's 2 things, like, throw this baseball at this coffee.
Yeah.
That's not really 2 things. But
throw that baseball through a window and fix the window.
Yes. Fixing the window would be a project because you have to call. But so that's like another thing. So like people put stuff off because.
It's too many steps.
So like fix the window is not one step. Fix the window is I need to Google a glass company.
Mm-hmm.
I need to call the glass company.
Mm-hmm.
And then schedule an appointment. So he says write that stuff down. So that you have it. So then, like, then you're more likely, okay, this is exactly what I have to do. Then you stop, again, subconsciously churning over it because it's vague and you know exactly what needs to be done when you're ready to do it. So there's the actions list and there's, like, the projects list. And then the projects obviously just get broke down into individual actions that you do. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I'm like, done the audiobook, which is painfully boring. I probably need to actually, like, physically read the book to, like, see how it lays out. But I've kind of looked at articles online where they show like a flow of it, because, you know, audiobooks sometimes leave things to be desired when they have
conceptualization. And that's what kind of like that bullet journal thing I was talking about earlier is very similar to that approach, where it's like basically the same idea, but it's different. It's basically that idea adapted to physical paper. So basically let's say you write down a big list of things, and then you're like, I got to do all these things. And then there are symbols where, and there's like a legend for this. So that's like a thing you have to learn, which I'm not super hyped about. But and each symbol means something. And so it's like there's a one-step thing where it's like, this is something I can do in, you know, 2 minutes versus here's a multi-step thing. And if it's a multi-step thing, then you outline the steps. And then the only thing that didn't work for me is you have to like do, let's say you have a notebook. You have to make it a calendar. So, like, you know, each page is a day. And then what you do from that big list is you, like, divide the things into a day based on, you know, when they need to get done. Mm-hmm. And then that, when you were talking, also reminded me of, I want to hear your opinion on this, that I read an article by Dan John, and I think it was adapted from another guy. I just looked up. I think his name's Rob Wolf. It's called, the concept is Shark Habits.
A lot of one syllable names. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Dan John, Rob Wolf.
Shark yeah, is one syllable too.
Shark Habits, which is like this idea that as he goes out throughout his day, I can't remember why it's like a shark habit. It's like you're going to get it done in one bite or something like that, where it's like, you know, if someone sends me a text, I'm going to text them right back. If someone asks me for a thing, I'm going to give it to them right there. If someone like, so basically there's no batching. When he gets a thing, he's going to do it. And like, for me, that is what I try to do with texts, because texts are one of those things that, like you're talking about, like if I have an email, I can mark it as unread, or I can like send it to a thing that I know, like, hey, I got to come back to that in a second. But with text, there's like, that's hard to do.
That's why texts are brutal.
They're tough.
For business.
And so I was like, okay, this is a great idea, but I don't know what your experience with this is, but for me, that like literally does not work just based on my daily activity, where it's like, I'll get a text or someone will send me an email, and it's literally impossible to like resolve that issue in the moment, where it's like it has to be batched, where like I'll take all these things that have to get done and put them in a chunk and say, okay, at 2:30, when I have 45 minutes to like sit down and do stuff, that's when I'll knock all these out. Because if I spend my day like do that and then do that, like nothing will ever get done.
I agree.
Okay, that's what I figured, but I was just like read that, and I'm sure I'm bastardizing to a certain degree the true purpose of it, and I need to consult the source material rather than how like Dan John kind of described it. But I was just like, that's an unrealistic way to get stuff done, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, sharks will grab it and then they'll like jiggle it around.
Yeah, you gotta wiggle it a little
and
bit.
They gotta tear off the bite, and then but then they could just go on their way if you punch them in the face.
Yeah.
But I guess I don't know what he means by that, but
yeah, and okay,
they're gonna eat until it's dead and they're full, whatever it is that they attack.
And the other thing that's really big for me is, and this is what reminded me of it, is like I'm a huge routines person. So like at the beginning of a week or the beginning of a day, I know what the next 24 or 48 hour or week is gonna look like, and I'll know, you know, I'll be able to look at or conceptualize my day on each day and go, okay, from this time to this time, I'll be able to get a bunch of stuff done. Or, like, and I'll have a slot there. But when, like, unexpected stuff boils up and it kind of, like, that's when I get screwed, where it'll be like, all right, I know, like, today, for example, I know after we get done with this podcast, I'm going to have, like, 2 hours to just hammer out a bunch of stuff. But if someone, like, were to call me, or if I go to my office at Heartland and someone like comes and sits down in the office, then I'm like screwed, because now it's like, oh, I budgeted those 2 hours to get a bunch of stuff done, and now I just got leached, and now I'm like way behind for the next like 48 hours. So that's another big thing. And I know this is why this new office is great, is because at times we just have to isolate ourselves and just be like, I can't answer emails over the next 2 hours. I can't answer phone calls. I can't answer texts, because I have to like hammer this stuff out.
Yeah. That text batching thing makes a lot of sense. That's why, so this year we went to a group chat called Discord, which is for gamers, so it's a little embarrassing at times when it'll like, it has like these little gamery messages, like when someone gets added to a group, it'd be like, Snurf,
yeah,
McLean has arrived, pew pew. It's weird.
Yeah. So, oh, McLean's OP.
Yeah, but it's just like Slack, but it's free. So I don't know if any of you in podcast land use Slack for work or whatever, but it's just this whole ecosystem where you can message, drop files. It's really, you know, DM each other. So for our Senators program, we asked everyone to be on that and message us, for the most part, exclusively through that. That way, all the text strings, we can send each other files, like anything. It's all like in one place. So when we need to do just like batch responses, like we can just jump into Discord. Okay, here's all my messages in one spot. You can do it on your computer and then hammer them out. Whereas texts, I get so many texts in a day. That like you said, that's one of my big problems. If I look at my phone and I get a business related text, hey, can I schedule lessons with you this time, and I'm like doing non-business stuff at the time, it's just like, I don't want to do, like, I'm not going to do this right now, and then there's no way you can't mark it as unread. It's just like
gets
tossed around in the ether, well, and then it's just like, and then you think about it and you know, like, subconsciously, like, I always remember late, and then it's just like, oh, I'm the worst.
Yeah, well, and because, you know, for me, it'll be like, I try as often as possible not to read them. Like, I'll say, oh, or it'll say, like, oh, it's from this person, and I'll, like, put on the, like, preview text. But because if you read it, and you know, oh, I'm gonna get back to that in like a couple hours. Then it's like you get six new texts, and then it's like off the immediate screen, and then it's out of your brain.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh God, 48 hours later, you get a response. And that's what stinks, is because, you know, people text you because, or like the theory is for me, people text you because they want a response in like the next, you know, hour or so. And so it's just like tough sometimes to like not respond knowing, because that's the other thing is, if I respond in the moment, I'm not as good at remembering the content of the conversation either. Whereas like, because I'll respond and then, you know, I'll get all these other conversations, and then I'll be like, oh, I had a text conversation with so-and-so, but I don't remember what it was about. And then it's just as useless.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's unfortunate that text is like pseudo-email for some people. Like, some people just text. Like, we get messages from our website. We get emails. We get Facebook messages. We get Instagram messages. We get occasionally tweets from, like, a college coach here and there, and those almost always take a long time for us to respond. And then we get texts, we get emails, we get phone calls. Some people want to meet with us in person. There's just like a million different ways.
Yeah, and we also, I go back and forth on it a lot. Like, we also hand out our personal cells as business cells. So like they operate simultaneously as a personal cell phone and a business cell phone. And that's difficult sometimes, but I don't know that there's a great alternative where it's like you can't carry around two phones. And it's like, I don't know if you give out a different number. I don't know if there's like a service that through Google, like you can give out. But it's still, the problem is still the same, where it all comes to one spot. So it's like, that's tough that way too.
Yeah. I want just an implantable.
Beeper? Should we bring back beepers?
I want to have a phone like they can like dig in, like chisel into my acromion and like implant stuff. And then anytime someone calls me, I just go boop. And then I'm just talking. And then it's just Bluetoothing into my brain. Just like in Futurama, they had like the iPhone where it was like they implant it. And
you could
just, like,
you know, they have that. You could just be that guy who wears around that Bluetooth thing all the time.
I still see old men wearing Bluetooth headsets, and I'm like, is it 1980 or 1998? Yeah. Like, those things still work really well.
Yeah.
They're just not.
They just have a connotation.
Why do they fall out of favor? I feel like they're still way better than, like, holding your phone.
Do you know the new iPhone or Apple earbuds that are, like, wireless?
Yeah.
Do those have a mic on them?
Yeah. Yeah, they can definitely take calls. And I can take
calls
on my head,
cool.
On my wireless headsets, but sometimes they pick up a lot of, like, the Michael Mine are pretty good, and it picks up a lot of background noise.
How much are those little wireless earbuds? Like $1 million?
From Apple?
Yeah.
Like $150,
$130. Oh, that's not as bad as I thought. But there's probably better, like, non-Apple models.
They just look kind of like weird. Like someone shot a massive loogie in your ear, and it's just, like, hanging
like
out.
Sliding out of your
like,
ear.
Yeah, gross. They're just, like, I remember I was in Chicago, like, a couple months ago. And whoever I was with, I was like looking at them, like those things just look kind of gross, like hanging out of your ears. And then you start noticing, like, so many people have them.
A lot of people have them.
And they're apparently very good. Like, people rave about them. Like, they're really clear, they take calls really well. Like,
I feel like I would lose it immediately, too, though.
You know, people say that, but I don't know. I think there's just a subset of people that just lose small things. And I don't. I'm not really that person. Like, I have my Apple Pencil, and the Apple Pencil has this little end cap that's magnetic that conceals the little lightning connector, because you stick the butt of the Apple Pencil into the lightning port of your iPad to sync it and to charge it. You can also charge it with a cable, but that's how you get it to Bluetooth up if it's not. And everyone's like, oh yeah, just be prepared, you'll lose that cap first day. It's like, I've had it like 3 months now. I'm like, I could definitely lose it. However,
I feel
I'm
like
not inclined to lose it.
It's also one of those things that I know, I feel like you and also I am decent about, like, things have a case, and they, like, they go, you're in there in use, and then they're out of use, they're in the case, and then they go back in use, you know what I mean? Like, as long as it's they're transferring from being in use to being in a case, you're probably not going
to
lose it.
Correct. And my pencil does go into this, like, little folio. Like, I have a keyboard that connects to the iPad, so it's always in that folio. It's either I'm in use or it's slide back into a spot. And if I threw my Apple Pencil into my bag, that cap would probably get knocked around, and then at some point it would probably get tossed out of the bag at some point. So,
speaking of organization, eating is also like a thing that requires a certain amount of pre-planning. How have your eating been over the course of our busyness?
My eating's been okay. I don't eat nearly as much as I used to, and my body's like fine with it.
Yeah.
And I'm not working out as much as I need to.
But that also, if you're not eating as much
as
you need to,
not eating that much. So
yeah, I definitely
I'm
go through
by.
Swings where, like, if I don't pre-plan and pre-organize my meals, then I just go pretty much without eating, And it's like, but if it's, if I'm also that busy, it probably means I'm not working out. So it kind of evens out too. But
yeah.
In other news, my quad feels really good.
It's healing.
Yeah.
I think you were on a walk the other day because I came in, your car was here and you weren't here.
Yeah. But yeah, so I'm back to, obviously with being in California, I wasn't working out. So I'm excited to get back to it and see if I can squat again.
Did you walk a bunch over there?
Yeah, it was, I mean, just a ton of walking. Although, also Ubered a lot.
Did you guys like, Airbnb or hotel it?
Hotel. We stayed at this hotel called the Aries Hotel, which was a pretty nice hotel. But when we ran a, so I like got on my computer and was trying to get some stuff done. I was like, man, this is super sluggish. So I ran a speed test. 2.5 megabytes down. And I was like, what? So I called the front desk and I was like, is this, can we remedy this? And the guy was like, oh yeah, let me talk to my manager. And then if he, you know, he'll reset the access point. And if that's, if that doesn't fix it, we'll call our data guy. I was like, okay. And it never got fixed. It got up to like, the max was like 4. And I was like, what?
That's
in the
like
world?
1980s speed.
Yeah.
That's
and so
like
then.
Impossibly slow.
Impossibly slow. Like literally impossibly slow.
You can't
slow.
Pay for
it. Dial up was like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And so then we were at the airport on our way back, and I was like, I'm just curious. I'm going to run a speed test on the, because like airport Wi-Fi is notoriously kind of slow. So I ran like a speed test on the LAX Wi-Fi, and it was like 25.
Yeah, that's slow.
Yeah, which is still
four
slow.
Four is like unbelievable.
Yeah, so it was amazing. So I would, so that hotel was good, but I would not go there again for the, literally that reason, which is crazy.
Do you hotspot your phone then or what?
Yeah, most of the time.
Hotspotting is great.
Yeah, hotspotting was, I think I was 20 on my hotspot. That sound right?
I never actually tested it. That's interesting. Yeah, all I want is Google Fiber. That's all I want in life.
Man, that would make that would be amazing.
Gigabyte up and down. That's crazy. Because uploading takes a lot of time. Where I have multiple devices, so I can like do all my video editing on my computer, let it export, let it upload. Because then it's just like basically just brain dead.
When I was actually
and then be on my iPad.
It's funny that, I mean, this just recently dawned on me that I was, you know, trying to like get some programs and stuff done, but I access all of our strength programs in the cloud. So not only is down important, but up's important. So it's like, I just realized that now with the prevalence of cloud and how everything exists in the cloud, now upload speed is more important than ever.
It really is. And it's really annoying waiting for it to sync. Cause like you said, it's gotta be on there. So then our other strength coach can access it.
Mm-hmm.
And for
so
me,
not only does it have to be, it has to be like, your upload speed has to be good locally to wherever, whether you're, you know, if you're here at Orbit and I'm in Champaign and Connor's in wherever, what was it? Armpitsville? If he's in Armpitsville, everybody's speed has to be good.
Yep. Well, fortunately, download's better. So once the person who uploads it gets it in there, then it should be, then it's easier. But, yeah, it's been nice that our upload speeds here have been better. Because it's just terrible. It's painful sometimes trying to get stuff out of, because I have to upload stuff to get it onto the cloud so then I can delete it from my computer once it's, like, run its course. So then I can free up my space again. Because this whole flash storage thing has really set everyone back in humanity.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was, like, a good thing where, you know, like, oh, everything's going to cloud storage, which it kind of is, but at the same time, you still need a certain amount of local storage and files are bigger than ever. And my computer continually gets overrun, or it's like, you're running out of space while I'm filming something or recording something. And then it's just like, well, we lost a podcast once from that, I think, or almost did. And then I had to stop one the other day, and then I had to delete stuff and then finish it, which is annoying. And
then I'm guessing Apple hard drives aren't upgradable?
Well, everything, no, they're not. Everything is like flash storage now, which is great. It's really fast. Computer wakes up quick, but, you know, to get an Apple MacBook with, they start at 128 gigabytes, which is like nothing.
Nothing.
And then I have 256, which is still kind of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I usually have 100 to 50, 50 to 100 free. And then, but if you want to go 512, it ends up being like a $400 jump for every like next increment in storage, which is just obnoxious.
Right. It's almost like we worked backwards where like now, I think.
Yeah, we're starting. We have less storage now than ever.
Yeah.
Because we went to the higher, but like it's not like flash storage is expensive. That's the thing. Like, I'll take an old terabyte of like the typical hard drive if it was cheap.
Right.
Like I never had a problem with the old ones before. They're slower, but now we're in the dark ages. But I bought a 128 gigabyte SD card for $40. It's like $38.
That's nuts.
128 gigabytes for $38, and that's retail from Amazon. Like, they made money on that. So it was like $6 to make that, probably. And they're charging $400 for, like, you know, that amount of upgrade on
that's
a computer.
That's insane.
When you can't upgrade yourself anymore. So that's irritating, but I guess this is life.
This is life.
I was looking at all these new computers, and it's just interesting where it's going. I want a touch screen.
I continually touch
my computer. My computer's like, hey, dude, like, relax. Because I'm constantly touching my iPad, and then I, like, start pushing on my computer.
You're like a monkey. And, like, and why no clothes?
Why are you doing this? It just doesn't work. But yeah. I'm sure the touchscreen Mac is, like, 5 years away.
Yeah.
Because they want to upgrade all the stupid stuff that's not important but annoying, like the USB-C ports. Like, we're going to make all of our laptops USB-C. So everything you do is irritating. You have to get adapters for everything and spend another $100 on adapters. But we're definitely not going to make a touchscreen like all these other laptops that are really convenient with touchscreens.
Right.
So we'll do the annoying stuff now, but we'll make you have to wait for they'll be the last to adopt, I'm sure, a touchscreen laptop. And it'll be way more expensive when it comes out.
I miss you, Steve Jobs.
Stupid Apple.
Stupid Apple.
Got me trapped. Well, this was Twinsies.
McLean, did you have fun sitting there doing nothing?
You produced great. Yeah, you produced great.
No, I'll be the guy who Googles stuff.
Oh, yeah. We can throw it
to McLean. That's a good idea.
Good job.
All right. This is all coming together.
Yeah. Good.
All right. We'll see you next week.